Hi, my name is Dr. George Turner, and I'm here at Western Sydney University. And today I'd like to talk about infertility. And the reality is 1 in 8 women will experience this issue. And I think it's important for our students to be exposed and understand this issue because we work in uncomfortable situations. We work in uncomfortable areas with our clients. And if we are wanting to join our clients, we need to be okay with the uncomfortableness and being able to hear real stories. I also think it's important to change the broke narrative and be able to recognize that infertility is a normal variation of reproduction for women. And to illuminate those stories for our students is important because our students may have experienced this very issue, and being able to bring yourself into the room with your clients and recognizing that clients need support and they need social workers to be informed and they need the kind of wraparound services that unfortunately all too often the medical community is not necessarily providing. I think this is a wonderful area where social workers could step in and provide the kind of support, care, and healing that so many need in this area. And so that is why I'd like to have this conversation today with you. So I would like to introduce our guest today, Heather Gugliani. She is going to share her story, her very real story, and there may be some tears and a little bit of pain, but I think this is something that is going to be useful for all of us. Thank you, Heather. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. So tell me a little bit, maybe a little bit of the background around your infertility journey. What happened?
Well, my husband and I, shortly after, so I'm currently 43, been married for about 5 years. Shortly after my husband and I got married, we decided, as most couples do, we wanted to start a family. So I went to my regular gynecologist, and just to make sure, you know, everything was normal, hormone levels were where they needed to be, et cetera, et cetera. And everything was fine. She said, go ahead and start, just as couples do, you know. And based on my age, she said, we give it 6 months, and if nothing happens in 6 months, we need to then investigate other why it's not working. So we did that, 6 months, went back. We started going down the checking the boxes of tests that they will perform on anyone who's 35 and over, making sure that tubes aren't blocked, things like that. Did all of that, everything came back as normal, and the doctor just said, you know what, your next step is just going to have to be IVF. Sorry, I will get emotional on this.
It's all right. Take a deep breath.
Everything is normal as far as no blockage. Uterus is fine. The shape is fine, et cetera, et cetera. Next step, we just say that you're going to go straight into doing IVF.
Sure.
And so we started down that journey.
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned 35. So some of our listeners, there's some critical ages for women and fertility. Can you speak a little bit to that about 35 and the fact your age put you in another category?
Yeah, it's something that as a woman you don't realize that, you know, you hear it all your life. Oh, your clock is ticking. Well,
right.
It's a legitimate thing that your clock is ticking. When you reach 30, you're born with, and I don't want to get too clinical here, but a woman is born with the number of eggs that she's going to have forever and ever.
Right.
And once you reach puberty and you get your period, you're releasing those eggs
right
every single month. You're never making, it's not like a man who's constantly making sperm every day over and over. what you're born with is all you've got. And you lose those every single month. And as you get older, the quality of them deteriorates.
Sure.
And that's what ended up being our biggest issue.
Was the quality?
The quality of my eggs.
Anytime you want to take a break, you let me know. Because we can edit some of this out and we can take a brief pause.
No, I'm okay.
Okay. So did they ever mention to you that, I know a lot of times they use the term geriatric pregnancy, meaning that you were older than, you were in a category of older than what is ideal for pregnancy. Did they ever talk about that?
They never used the term geriatric, geriatric pregnancy. It was discussed that if the fertility treatments would work, I would automatically be a high-risk pregnancy. Not only because of my age, but because of the way the pregnancy would have been created.
Sure.
Because it wouldn't have been done naturally. It would have come about through synthetic medication and things like that. That automatically puts you in a high risk category.
I'm going to go off on a small tangent. Obviously, this is very emotional for you. What was it like when they discussed the fact that it was your eggs? And did you ever feel guilty?
Oh, God, it's heartbreaking. It's you're in a relationship where you want something so incredibly bad, and you want nothing more than to give your partner something that they can't get themselves. And when you go into a doctor's office over and over and over again, and all you ever hear is, it's your eggs, it's your eggs, it's your eggs. The guilt that you feel for not being able to give your partner the one thing they can't get themselves, it's something that you never really truly know how to deal with that.
Sure.
And to be honest, it's not something that the doctors ever give you information on. You know, they never once, it's all about, for the infertility doctors, it's all about getting you pregnant. It's never about, which that's what you're seeing them
right
for, but it's never about, here's a resource to help you figure out that.
And that was
here's something to help you deal with not only the shame that you're feeling, the guilt that you're feeling, the resentment of your own body, the resentment of just wondering if there's choices that you made throughout your life that caused this. The medical community does not think about any of the emotional or psychological side about it. Granted, that's not what they're there for, but there is that line drawn in the sand where it's everything outside of me getting you pregnant, everything outside of making this medical miracle possible for you, that's on your own to figure it out.
Right. So I just want to highlight for students that might be listening here, this is a really key point for the kind of continuum of care that we talk about in social work or wraparound services, that your experience was, it was purely medical. And doctors are focusing on what they're there to do, and that is to get you pregnant. But there was a gap in the services, meaning, maybe you could speak, you've hinted at this, there was no psychological support, mental health support. Was there any relationship support for you and your husband?
None of that.
Okay, so that could have been something that could have been useful.
Very useful. And, you know, there's, when you walk into the doctor's office, there might be a brochure sitting on the corner table directing you to a local group, but no one asks you, how are you feeling about this? Are you doing okay with this? Do you need to talk to someone about this aspect? Or is there more that we can do in this angle or that angle? So you're really left. I personally was left to my own devices to find that support group. One of the things that my husband and I chose at the very beginning is how open we were going to be about what we were going through. And I flat out said to him, listen, you can be my support system, or we can tell everyone what we're doing and I can open up the door to everyone else to be my support system. It's your choice and I'll respect whatever you're comfortable with. I'm a very open and out there person. He's a very private person. And once he realized, oh no, I can't have me being the only person that she talks to. Okay, so we're going to open it up and we're going to let everyone know. So I sought out friends. I was very public about what we went through. I found Facebook groups that I could go and talk to other women who were doing exactly what I was doing. I had to find it all on my own.
And these would be good tips for students who might find themselves sitting in front of a client who is experiencing this, and their medical team has not given them this support. The student might suggest, hey, you might want to talk to your spouse about opening up your support system and looking outside of perhaps the mental health field. And there might be Facebook, there might be actual support groups where those couples could go get additional support.
Absolutely.
Let me ask you another question. Were there any stressors, or did your relationship with your partner suffer any kind of dings, bruised egos, whatever?
I can honestly say, for me and my husband, our relationship became stronger through this. A lot of couples do not experience that, and they, end up on the other side of this with all of these disappointments and letdowns, feeling resentment towards one another because, oh, your sperm count isn't high enough and you're the reason I'm not getting pregnant. My eggs are bad and you're the reason that you're not giving me a child. So there can be a lot of that goes back and forth. Luckily, my husband and I didn't have that. We were very open with our whatever it was that we were feeling and whatever it was that we needed from the other person. There was a moment we went through three cycles, and I did get pregnant each time. Each time I miscarried. And we had decided at the very beginning that, okay, we're not going to be one of those couples that's going to do this 9, 10, 11, 12 times. We're going to go once. We're going to do an egg retrieval. We're going to get as many eggs as we can from that. We'll use those eggs, and that's it. We're not going to spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and years.
Because it's expensive.
I mean, we did spend tens of thousands of dollars of it. But we didn't want this process to hijack our entire lives. It hijacked 4 or 5 years of our lives, and we didn't want it to hijack our entire life. So we made that decision, and I think that making that decision from the very beginning is one of the things that did, in fact, save our marriage. We knew what the expectations were.
You didn't go down a rabbit hole.
Exactly.
You knew what, and so that might be another suggestion for a student or a social worker who's working with clients, to say it might be useful to kind of know what the process for you looks like. Mm-hmm. And I'm just periodically going to highlight some things that students might pick out of this conversation.
Sure.
Another question for you. How, I can only imagine that this impacted you personally And I wonder if you might talk a little bit about perhaps your sense of identity as a woman, what it was like to realize motherhood was not in your future, what it was like to be of an age where your friends are all starting families. Couldn't you speak a little bit about
that? Sure. That's probably the one part that I think I don't want to say have mastered, but you do go through this period of time where everything that you were taught through society that you are supposed to be is now completely foreign. You grow up in your teens and your 20s and you think getting pregnant is what you're supposed to do. That's what your body was made to do. And all of a sudden,
that's the one narrative. That's the one story that a lot of women subscribe to, that right. A lot of society has given them.
Right. You meet that special someone, you get married, the next step is kids, the next step is a second kid, and so on and so forth. And you get all of these questions, and it's just ingrained in you that, okay, that's what I'm supposed to do. That's what my life trajectory should be. And when all of that falls apart, so to speak, you're lost. And it's kind of this, well, if my body can't do that, then what is it supposed to do, you know? And so your self-esteem gets hit. I mentioned before how guilty I felt that I wasn't able to give my husband the one thing that he couldn't just walk into a store and buy himself. You resent not only yourself, but you resent every person out there who's getting the dream that you can't get. You resent the people who expect that of you. And every single time the question comes up, and it still comes up, and I still sometimes cringe. Well, do you have kids? No. Are you going to have kids? No. You know, it's this. And then they want to know why. Well, why? Well, what business is that of yours? So you just kind of, you know, it never gets easier. It never really gets easier.
I was wondering if you might speak a little bit about your husband's experience and your kind of insight into what this was like for him.
It's a little difficult for me to speak about what this has been like for him and what it's done to him. He kept the focus on me. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. But he kept the focus on what I was doing for him, how much I was putting myself through for him. Also kept the focus on how strong of a person I was to continue going through all of this. And even now, wanting to continue going. You know, we've figured out that, okay, I can't have children with my own eggs, so we've been contemplating using donor eggs. And when I'm the one who brought that subject up to him, and you know, the look on his face was complete shock. Oh my God, you want to keep going? He doesn't talk a lot about how he's felt through the whole thing or how it's impacted him. And that goes back to him being a private person, and being always needing to be the crutch that I need so that I can keep on going.
I know that the treatment process can impact you physically. It can have side effects, and there can be interactions with meds that you may be on. Can you speak to that a little bit? Was there any risks? Were there any troubles, any challenges with your day-to-day life?
Yeah, that's also something that the medical doctors don't discuss with you. When you're pumping your body full of all of these hormones that, yes, your body already produces, but it's like times 10 the amount that they're, you know, trying to, that they're pumping into you, because they're trying to get your body to do what it does naturally, but at an increased rate. So I was several times a day injecting myself in my stomach and in my butt muscle. They would tell you, oh, you might feel a little bloated after this. Bloating doesn't begin to cut what you feel. And again, it's different for each woman, but I can say for me, there were periods of time through each IVF cycle, and again, we did it three times, there were periods that I had to wear my husband's clothing because I was so bloated. I had to go out and get maternity pants, which is also a slap in the face. And I had to wear his shirts because I couldn't, nothing fit because
sure.
Everything in the middle was so, so bloated. They don't talk about, oh, you'll get knots and bumps and, you know, whatever at the injection sites, and just completely foreign your body is to you during this entire thing. And on the mental side of it, emotional side of it, I can remember one particular moment in our very first cycle. I was maybe a week into my shots, and I needle in my stomach, and I just had this voice inside me, why me? And I collapsed on the floor, needle still in my stomach, and had to take a very deep breath and, okay, Heather, you got to get it together. You've come too far. You can't stop now. Finish the shot. Then you can have your breakdown. And did that. Got myself together. And it's just these mental exhaustion moments that they don't prepare you for.
Some people might ask, and it might have been some of the conversations that maybe family and friends asked, but I also know that they're different trajectories. So people might say, why not adopt? Why don't you do foster care? And I know seemingly those are all the same thing, but you and I have had a conversation. They're very different journeys. So how do you respond, or what was that like to have people say, oh, well, you can still adopt, or hey, you can still do foster care? What was that like for you and your husband?
You're not in this by yourself. You're hopefully, I mean, I was lucky enough, I was in it as a team. It was me and my husband. I may be very open to the idea of fostering a child or adopting a child. That doesn't automatically mean he's okay with it. And if you're in a good, strong partnership, then you make those compromises. And I have to accept that that's not something he is emotionally and mentally able to handle. Not only that, but there's this whole can of worms that 10 years from now, if I do adopt and I have a child, 10 years from now, when that child starts to ask questions, why don't I look like you? Why don't I look like dad? You know, this kind of stuff. Okay, there's this whole other
stuff.
Mental, emotional, all of this stuff that you've got to go through, and not just for yourself, but you've got to go through it for that child as well. And yeah, it's really very easy for people to say, well, you want a kid. There's all these ways you can get a kid, but they're not stopping to take into consideration all of the stuff that goes into that process. You know, it's one thing to put myself through years and years and years of agony and pain to do all of this, but it's another thing to say, okay, you know what? I want this so bad that what I want is more important than what that child may feel years from now. And so it's very easy for people to say, well, just go adopt a kid. Well, I'm not walking into the grocery store and picking up some, you know, a carton of milk.
There's a lot more to consider.
There's just a lot more to consider. And I think yes, this is a very selfish road for me to go down, but just walking out and saying I want to adopt a kid, I think without taking into consideration everything years from now is even more selfish.
This process potentially has come to completion for you. Potentially you're at the end of this journey of parenthood or having a child. Was there ever a sense of relief? And what was that like to experience?
Yeah, that's something that that's the new hurdle that I think I have reached. It's, you know, I'm 43. Our next step, should we want to continue, is donor eggs. That could be another 2-3 years down the road before that works, if it works. That puts me at the age of 45, 46. Do I want to have a child at that age? And so now I'm struggling. Like I said, I've reached the hurdle of kind of feeling relief that it didn't work, because now I'm able to do all of these things that my friends that are the same age as me who do have children aren't able to do.
What's that like, experiencing that?
There's a whole nother set of emotions that comes into that, because you feel guilty for feeling relieved. You've spent tens of thousands of dollars trying to make something happen, something that you really, really, really want. And then you get to what could potentially be the end of that road and saying, okay, well, this is what my life is like without that goal having been achieved. This isn't so bad. And maybe this is better. And these are emotions that I have yet to discuss with my husband. And so I feel there's an amount of guilt and being mad at myself for, well, God, why'd you waste all that time then? Why'd you waste all that money then, if you're just going to get to the end of the journey and realize maybe this is better?
There's almost an expectation that you should be miserable.
There is totally an expectation that you should be miserable. And it's not just, I still experience that from friends and family. I have friends who did get pregnant and they, you know, baby showers, first birthdays, whatever it is. And it's like, well, God, I don't know that we should invite Heather because she's probably still, there's this almost a feeling of, God, she's never going to be able to be happy for any of us because she's feeling this certain way. And people just automatically assume that, yeah, you're going to be miserable for the rest of your life because you didn't get that one thing.
Right.
And that there's this inability to fill that with other things.
Right. I think that's, again, an important message for my students to hear, and that is to be able to have conversations with potential clients that this is also an outcome. This right here is also a legitimate outcome that clients, couples, people you are engaging with, preparing them that they don't have to be miserable and that life goes on. There's hope and that there's resilience in all of us and that there can be a new narrative that people create.
Absolutely.
We're doing that all the time. Final question for you. Why would you agree to do this interview? What do you want students to get from this?
Just the pure and simple knowledge. I mean, this was the going back to the question that I asked of my husband from when we started this journey, people need to know. This is such a taboo topic. You know, when we started down this and I started talking to all friends and family members and all of this, I was astounded to hear all of the women who also had problems and also had, you know, miscarriage after miscarriage or, you know, hiccups along the way. And we need to, society as a whole, we need to know that pregnancy is not that easy. And pretty much all women experience this. And I think if we talk about it more and we're more open with these experiences, then the next woman who realizes that her eggs are too old and their quality isn't good enough, she's not going to say, God, well, I'm worthless.
Exactly. And I think you've said this, and that is recognizing there's many narratives and helping our clients recognizing that motherhood is one narrative, but there are other narratives, and there can be really great lives and quality lives and happy lives and fulfilling lives in these other narratives, but we don't ever speak about those options. And I think you sharing this story gives that option and lets students hear that option so that they can also share that with our clients.
Absolutely.
Well, I really want to thank you for sharing this very intimate story, and I feel very honored to have heard it, and I hope the students also feel privileged to be a part of this. And again, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.